Hello, and welcome to a roundtable discussion on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, I'm joined by guests for a lively conversation on a topic we hope you'll find interesting. In this roundtable discussion, I'm joined by my sister, and we have just watched Man of Steel from June 2013.
That sounds right.
This is, one, we watched it because with the upcoming Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice, it's like, you know, it's been a few years since we've seen some of these films.
Yeah.
It's been a few years since they were released. So we figured we'd watch that one again, and I have kind of really mixed feelings about it because, you know, I love the Superman character.
Mm-hmm.
He's a tough one to do right, both in terms of just generally writing stories and doing him on film. And we've had so many versions, live-action versions, over the decades. The Christopher Reeve, Superman.
George Reeve.
You go back to the George Reeves for the original TV show. You've got Dean Cain from Lois and Clark. You've got Tom Welling from Smallville.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Brandon Routh from the previous Superman movie. And then Henry Cavill here,
mm-hmm.
who I thought great casting, did a terrific job.
Yeah.
Stands, you know, right up there with all of the others as having been, for their time, I feel, very good incarnations of Superman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had the humanity. He played well as Clark the few times we saw him as such, and very believably as Superman.
Mm-hmm. Well, and he did a good job going through that, I want to phrase this, that teenage angst of accepting who he is and how to deal with being different and discovering the X-ray vision and those things and striving to be the best person he could be.
But that's part of where this movie didn't work as well for me as some of the other incarnations, is this was an alien invasion movie at its heart.
Oh, it was, yeah. I'll agree with that.
You know, Zod and all the other Kryptonians coming to conquer Earth and whatnot. It was almost a, you know, sci-fi, you know, movie of the week kind of a thing in that regard. And I don't mean in terms of quality, but in terms of basic plot.
It was very much a Zod and his compatriots wanted to terraform Earth into being Krypton, etc.
Well, I mean, there are scenes that rival Independence Day and other, you know, sci-fi disaster movies.
Yeah.
And it worked, and they did it well.
Yeah.
But I didn't particularly care for how this Jonathan Kent really raised Clark to, you know, keep everything secret because it'll change the world, and really dumped a lot of pressure on young Clark. And I felt they handled that aspect of it much better in Smallville.
Mm-hmm.
Even the Superboy TV show, I thought, did, I don't want to say a better job. It was a very different tone and style and whatnot. But it wasn't the, you know, if people get wind that you're an alien, it'll change society.
Mm.
They'll fear you. They'll put you in a lab. And, you know, it's not that that's not believable.
No, and I agree with you in a lot of respects. But there were one or two scenes with Pa Kent that I did particularly enjoy because it was very much the, you get to choose what kind of man you're going to grow up to be.
They use that line two or three times in the movie.
And when he's doing it, not in the context of because you're going to change the world, but simply as advice that applies to any child, any teenager. I liked it as a parenting style.
Yeah, but there's also the aspect of he is Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether he had turned out to be Superman or an evil incarnation thereof or whatever, there is an aspect of with the powers and abilities he has, he's not just going to be a run-of-the-mill person.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly has the potential of altering the course of a planet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, be it saving it or demolishing one of the major cities in it, or both.
Yeah. Well, and Pa Kent steering him away from saving lives or implying that I know you want to save lives, but you can't always do that because it's not always the right decision. was hard.
A moral complexity to this film that is typically lacking from superhero films, or most films in general, for that matter.
Yeah.
And when Jonathan Kent gets swept up by the tornado, and he's basically telling Clark, no, no, don't save me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm willing to put my life at risk, or not at risk, and you know.
Yeah. It's too soon for people to see who and what you are.
The world is not ready.
Yeah.
But never once did he give Clark any kind of indication as to would the world ever be ready, or how to make the world become ready.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, there was a certain aspect of fear there versus Superman normally being a symbol of hope and inspiration and that we can be better.
Mm-hmm.
There was a certain succumbing to the almost assuming the worst in people.
Yeah. It was very much, this movie was very much a product of current mindsets and thinking as opposed to the thinking and the mindsets when the character was first created.
It almost feels like if the character had been created 10 or 15 years later, around the 50s, 60s, when we had all the alien invasion movies and all of that stuff, versus back in, you know, 38 when the character was created.
I would almost have this feeling more Cold War era.
I guess for me, there are certain points in time where the aliens are clearly going to attack. What else could they do? Mindset.
Yeah.
And again, the 50s, 60s, you know, sci-fi movies tended, some of them tended to have that. There were other periods where sci-fi movies were action, adventure, the Buck Rogers, the Flash Gordon, that sort of a thing, too.
Yeah.
So this had a darker tone to it, a more complex aspect to it morally. And also, I think probably the most controversial moment in any Superman film was when he kills Zod. See, and by the way, we're going to have spoilers galore in here if I didn't mention that earlier.
I was just thinking that. It's funny because you point that out when it happened. And I thought.
And you're like, huh? What?
Well, it was funny because you said that's the most controversial thing in the film. I'm like, why? Because to me, they'd spent the entire past like 5 minutes setting up that this is a genocidal, homicidal maniac at this point who has just declared that his sole reason for existing is to kill every human, whether or not he can repopulate this planet with Kryptonians.
There is a contingent of people who believe that Superman could have and should have and would have found a way to prevent Zod from killing anyone else without having to kill Zod. I would like to think that, given that this Superman is literally brand new to being Superman. He's had the powers for a while.
But
he's had the Kryptonian heritage aspect for, what, a day or two?
Yeah.
So he doesn't have a Fortress of Solitude. He doesn't have a Phantom Zone projector. He doesn't have many options.
He doesn't have resources. He doesn't have allies within the U.S. government, even, really.
He hasn't even become Clark Kent. He doesn't even have the Daily Planet allies.
Yeah. He was alone fighting a guy who, even while in a chokehold, was using his heat vision to try and kill a family with two small children.
Yeah. I mean, Zod was literally seconds away from vaporizing an innocent family. And, you know, Superman pleads with him, and the guy's not budging. And like you said, they'd spent the last few minutes establishing Zod's going to be Zod.
Yeah, no one will ever be safe from this man. He has declared it and proven it. It's not just a matter of him telling us this. He's shown us this time and again.
I mean, I believe it was a justifiable action, given the situations.
Mm-hmm.
You can't let somebody with that kind of a power and that mindset loose.
Well, and it was balanced by the scenes we'd had earlier with the colonel, what was his name, Colonel Hardy, where even when he kept telling his men, yeah, go ahead, take out the guy in blue also, we're just, if they're alien, aim for him. And Superman kept saving the colonel's life and his men's lives and making sure humans were protected, even as he knew they were aiming at them.
Yeah. I mean, they established the core moral compass that Superman has very, I think, effectively here.
Yeah.
I think some of the motivation for it puts a potentially not so great light on it. of he's doing it out of fear versus it's just the right thing to do.
I think they gave both motivations.
The fact that there could be the fear motivation even ascribed to it disappoints me.
Yes.
Whereas in Smallville, in the original theatrical movies back in the 70s, it was just, this is the right thing to do. How could you not do it?
Yeah. Well, and going back to, this was a very complex version of Superman because he's got those questions about his parentage. And by the end of the movie, he's striving to make both fathers proud.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because particularly coming off the Brandon Routh film, that Superman was much more in the Christopher Reeve kind of school of Superman, if you will. Very happy, very, you know, smiles a lot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this one, the suit's a darker blue.
Mm-hmm.
The character is not a drastically darker Superman, but a darker Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if... having seen the trailer for Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice, there are scenes in there that I can picture the Brandon Routh Superman in, but it comes across totally differently.
Mm, I can see that, yeah.
Because, you know, there's a scene of what have you done from Superman that with this Superman comes across as very judgmental, very, very harsh, very, you know, almost I'm disappointed in you or whatever. Whereas in my mind, when I would picture if that scene had been done with the Brandon Routh Superman, it would have been genuine perplexion.
Yeah.
What have you done? I don't understand.
Yeah.
Because again, that was a brighter Superman, if you will.
Well, it's interesting because this Superman doesn't want any humans put at risk, doesn't want them to die. He has that hope that everyone can get along, everyone can survive, and yet he will talk to Lois Lane. He trusts Lois Lane because she earned his trust.
That was the other thing with this film that I thought was just wildly different from other incarnations of the Superman mythos. One, we really see her as the investigative journalist who uncovers who Superman is.
Mm.
We see her not betraying that trust.
Mm-hmm.
And it really all has the payoff at the end of the film when Superman is decided to embrace the Clark Kent persona, become a reporter at the Daily Planet. We don't know how he gets the job, but we know he gets the job.
Mm-hmm.
And he shows up there. She knows exactly who he is.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't betray. So from the minute they work together,
but she
knows.
But she has that great line when he's at the office.
I loved that. Welcome to the planet.
Yeah.
And I've got to imagine the writer on this, it's like, no, this is how the movie ends.
Yeah.
And it was a beautiful ending.
Yeah.
And I love the dynamic between those characters. And it sets... It's funny because this is very much the origin story for Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Much like the original theatrical film back in the day was. But it's also he's fighting, you know, Kryptonians and stuff, Zod and whatnot. So it's almost like the second film as well.
Yeah.
And they tell a lot of story here. And it's good. The effects in some places were just amazing. In other places, they were amazing but felt very video gamey.
Mm-hmm.
Just because that's really our main frame of reference these days for this sort of a all-out fight scene against, you know, unstoppable people.
Yeah.
It was well done. But it would be, you know, what would they follow this up with was kind of the question up until, again, Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I think of Superman, I think of him being Clark Kent, working at the Daily Planet,
mm-hmm.
and having that relationship with Lois Lane, where she is interested in Superman and he's almost jealous of himself.
Well, because Clark's invisible to her.
Yeah.
Whereas this is a fundamentally different vantage point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she discovers Clark because she's looking for Superman.
Yeah.
But while we had quite a few scenes of the two of them together, it's a fundamentally different dynamic than in almost every other film where she first meets Clark before Superman's really even come on the scene.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a interesting decision, one that I thought worked wonderfully.
Yeah.
This was one of the better versions of Lois I think we've gotten.
Yeah. It made her a very strong and powerful character. And for me, it made their relationship stronger. It made him a more honest character in their relationship.
Well, because he never once lies really directly to her or even by implication as to who he is.
Yeah.
Whereas in most versions, you go back to the pilot for Lois and Clark, and some of the stuff that Clark slash Superman does kind of to Lois to protect the identity or whatever is almost bordering on cruel.
Yeah.
You know, it's like he's having fun at her expense or something.
Yeah.
At least early in the season, maybe not necessarily the pilot. It's been long enough since I've watched that. And it was all fun, good stuff, but this, again, they've got a stronger and better foundation for the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Because he opened up to her, she believed in him, didn't betray the trust. He never had a betrayal of trust, you know, the other way. Again, lying about being Clark, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's also so radically different than the early Superman stuff. And really, there's an entire era in, I guess, the 50s where Lois is always trying, well, 50s, 60s, probably into the 70s, Lois is always trying to find out who is Superman. Oh, it's got to be Clark Kent, all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Or even the more recent Superman stuff in the comics where it's motivated by the fact that Lois discovered Clark Kent was Superman and released that information.
Mm.
So, and again, whether it's justifiable, yada, yada, it's just they've taken the core of the mythos, the parts they liked, and reworked aspects to make it play for a modern audience, and I think did a good job with that. And they, it's funny, because we spent a lot of time on Krypton, and that was one where I felt they veered a lot from the comics. There are aspects of it that looked very sci-fi, you know, floating cities and all this stuff, robots. And
reminded me a lot of Vulcan. Very hostile environment.
Yeah, I could see that. There was aspects of a Vulcan of Star Trek. There was also a little bit of Star Wars-ishness when we saw the big, you know, creature at the beginning. It almost felt a little Harry Potter or Lords of the Rings-ish when Jor-El calls his flying steed or whatever.
Yeah. I was torn between that and Avatar.
Avatar was the other one that came to my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And these are all beautiful and very impressive images and
mm-hmm.
visuals, but it goes, not that it goes against, it's that it doesn't align with the early Krypton stuff, kind of the classic pre-crisis Krypton stuff, the John Byrne, you know, more sterile, you know, Krypton and such.
It certainly didn't go with the Krypton we've been seeing over on Supergirl.
No, it, you know, or the previous movies or anything like that. And part of the fun for the people doing the movie, of course, is to re-envision some of the stuff. And I get that. And that's fun. I don't want to rob them of that. But it just felt like a very odd mishmash of, you know, they've already stripped their environment clean, yet they have all these animals still. How come they didn't die off? And
yeah.
You know, I think you could analyze the Krypton scenes and it would kind of sort of fall apart.
Mm.
But it was fun to look at.
When I remember when they were showing the trailers on TV before the movie came out, and I remember having to ask you, okay, so who's his dad? Because I was hearing Russell Crowe on the commercials with these great lines of dialogue. You know, you will be the hope of humanity. You will have this role of leadership. But then I was hearing Kevin Costner was his dad.
Oh.
So I was getting so confused from the trailers. And that's when you were telling me, no, they're going to have both the fathers playing meaningful roles in his life.
Well, and that was one of the things that kind of confused me a little about the film, is we get the whole, you know, Krypton's doomed, it's going to explode, launch the kid into space. And they go into a lot of detail about that, which is fine. And in that detail, Zod kills Jor-El. Okay. But this is after they've put the kid in the rocket ship, it's about to launch, etc. We then skip forward 2-3 decades. We've gotten Clark. He's up in the Alaska-ish area, whatever. They found this ship that's been embedded in the ice for
20,000 years, give or take.
20,000 years. That just happens to have...
Nope. That's what I thought at first.
It's the key, isn't it?
The command key uploads it. And they really don't explain that properly until Lois uses the command key on the ship that she and Superman go up to towards the end.
Okay, I'll buy that.
They give a better explanation there.
The part they could have and should have done better then is on Krypton, after I think Zod's been sentenced, Lara is putting away Jor-El's suit, which is essentially Superman's armor, or his costume. No explanation as to how that winds up on this ship, unless it was fabricated, and if we had seen it being fabricated,
see,
that would have been cool.
And it was different, though.
It was the inner suit, not the whole armor.
But even the inner suit looked to be, his was sort of a navy blue versus the brighter royal blue of Superman's, etc. It was slightly different.
Okay.
So that's why I figured he led him over to a replicator or something on that colony ship that had made something for him that happened to be a perfect fit because, you know, it scanned his measurements when he wasn't looking.
If they had done a visual, you're being scanned.
Yeah.
And then as he's being led, we cut to this thing starting to form up the suit.
Yeah.
To where as it's pivoting and being unveiled, it's just now finishing or something.
They could have been a lot clearer about when we actually boarded the colony ship from the ice.
There is that.
Because one minute we're tunneling through ice and the next minute we're inside the ship.
There were a number of places where I thought the cuts they did just kind of skipped over a couple of things.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it was a 2-hour and 23-minute film, so don't...
Thereabouts.
Don't get me wrong. They had to leave some stuff on the cutting room floor. I get that. But...
But there were a few places where things were a little too... I almost want to say metaphysical or whatever, but a little confusing. When Zod and Clark are first kind of talking about Zod wanting to take over the world...
Yeah.
Where was that taking place?
That seemed to be kind of a hallucination while Clark was adapting to the air and the environment aboard the ship.
So that's Zod, what I took it as, but they could have been clear versus he just collapses. He might be dying.
As Zod keeps talking to him anyway, because Zod has faith in their superior genetics and their whole eugenics style program.
This was also, I think, the first time that we've had the atmosphere of Krypton on Earth be drastically different. And I thought the clear face spacesuit things that could become, you know, looking more armored or whatever, great visual, interesting thing.
99 times out of 100, it worked great for me. There were a few times when the actresses would turn their heads and it looked like the person doing the effects couldn't quite figure out how form-fitted the nose area should be versus domed, and it would look a little awkward.
There are a few places where it's like, are the eyes just open, or are they inset, or, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, there were a few places it didn't quite work.
You know, and it was just it's like, is it a perfectly form-fitted and contoured mask, or is it a dome? And there was something going on at the cheek area.
They had some detailing, some piping or whatever.
Yeah.
But, I mean, to me, that even goes to Superman's costume. They had, on the forearm section, detailing or whatever that almost was gauntlet armory. And I was okay with that. It was the stuff that was coming up the side on his torsos or whatever.
You mean you weren't distracted enough by my asking you if his outfit developed scales?
No, because I had already, it's like, okay, they've kind of noodled and given it like a texture or something like that. They do the same thing on like the Star Trek films for the reboot. They got to have the little icon, you know, almost micro printed onto the whole thing. It's like, you know, we've got this high definition camera. Let's put some detail in to really kind of, you know, pick up them on for the camera versus it's just a blue shirt kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Or blue sleeve, you know, whatever. The cape also felt about a foot too long. When he was being brought in the handcuffs and stuff, it's dragging on the floor. It's like, why?
Yeah.
Nitpick, I know, but, you know.
I loved the scene in the interrogation room with the handcuffs. Not just because the whole, I know he's going to pop them apart because they haven't even thought about his strength, but I loved the whole looking over and saying, you know, I can read your ID badge. I can see your breath mints. I can see the guys in the room beyond with the drink darts.
On the one hand, it was cool. On the other hand, it seemed like not... there's a no-win situation. It's not that smart of a tactical move. But if they realize you've been lying to them the whole time...
Yes.
That's not too smart of a tactical move.
This Superman tips his hand a lot and tells people things that strengthen the other party. He told Zod how to focus.
Yes, I thought that was a bad move.
And learn how to control the sense overload.
Well, and that's the fundamental difference between Superman and Batman. Batman would never do that. And it's the sort of thing, if that were to happen in the Batman versus Superman, I would expect Batman to chastise Superman. Don't tell him that.
Pretty much.
There were parts of the destruction scene in Metropolis where it seemed like they pretty much leveled most of town.
You mean the part where I asked you if this was the Twin City to New York in Avengers?
Pretty much. But there comes a point where Perry and company have just gotten out of the Daily Planet. They can't be but a few blocks away, and you look around and it's like everything is rubble.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, they have flattened the center of town or wherever.
And dropped most of a building around one of the characters, so poor Perry has to be using a stop sign to crowbar her out of it.
But by the end of that, that is on the edge of this big circle of destruction that there's nothing in the middle of town.
Mm-hmm.
And I say middle because I would imagine the Daily Planet building is centrally located.
Okay. Yeah, I'll give you that.
But then a few minutes later, they're flying around all these other parts of Metropolis that are getting damaged, but are otherwise, prior to that, unscathed.
Because Metropolis is that big. I've decided that
it's... I've never lived in New York, so I don't have that as a frame of reference. I imagine a city could be that big. And, okay, it just, I don't know, it seems...
I'm just saying that if you're a really big city in a comic book movie, expect to get destroyed.
Even when they had the planes going in for the bombing run and stuff like that. It's not like this section of town over on the left is okay, but over on the right, well, that's the crater. Skip that. That's already toast. And there, wherever the camera landed, it's like there are still people who are like, hey, maybe I should leave.
I know, right?
You're just now coming to this?
I know.
People are swatting each other around like flies, and they're flying for blocks through buildings. It's, I mean, again, the scenes of destruction were amazing. There are a few places a little hard to follow because things are happening pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
But it just shows how just crazy the technology has gotten.
Yeah.
And there was a Scott McCloud. He's a comic book artist, creator, best known for understanding comics and some other stuff. Did create your own series called Zot for a while.
Okay.
One of the other things he's done that he's perhaps not well enough known for was a tabloid-sized comic. So 17 by 11 kind of big size thing, maybe even bigger, that came out, I'm going to say, 84-ish, give or take 5 years. I don't remember when it came out. Long, long time ago, black and white, called Destroy.
That's a subtle name.
The basic thing was two superpowered guys having a slugfest.
Gosh.
And I don't know how it matches up to the scene we just saw in Man of Steel.
So basically, you're wondering if he drew the storyboards for this scene back in the 80s?
Almost. I mean, there was a scene where at the end you get this two-page spread, and there's just this carved-out chunk of town that's been destroyed. Obviously, there was more destruction here, but it's the same mentality.
Yeah.
A little over the top, but, you know, hey, it works. But, I mean, we also got the destruction of a large part of Smallville.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they never really establish how far Smallville and Metropolis are here. Mm. But Lois seems to make the trip fairly quickly.
Well, and the government never figures out Superman's real name, but they are well aware he grew up in Kansas 33 years ago.
Yes, but I think also, I'm trying to think if she referred to him as Clark at that point.
No, she referred to him as Clark when he was on his front porch and a cop had let her out and she was away from the cop car.
But I think there's a decent contingent of the cops and the military that is like, I didn't hear anything.
Yeah.
I was, and I remember this from seeing it before, surprised how many familiar faces were in the film.
Agreed.
We're getting introduced to Richard Schiff as Emil Hamilton. Sitting right there is the guy who played that character in Smallville.
Nice.
Nice little callback there. There was one of the actors we'd seen on Flashpoint. One or two that we'd seen from Continuum. Steve Lombard, who pre-crisis was the sports reporter on the TV station that Lois and Clark worked at. He was played here by one of the guys from House of Cards on Netflix. And it, by and large, it was a really good, solid cast.
Yeah.
Again, no Jimmy, no Lex, a number of kind of standard things that just didn't have time for.
You know, it's funny because on the one hand, I miss Jimmy Olsen. On the other hand, because I've been watching Supergirl, I was glad he wasn't here. I don't think I would have enjoyed a portrayal of him, especially at a younger phase, since I'm enjoying him so much over on Supergirl.
Well, and I'm curious if and when they get somebody to play Superman on Supergirl, who they're going to get.
Yes.
And how that's going to, if that then opens up other, you know, Superman characters that we haven't gotten,
mm-hmm.
you know, Perry, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Because this movie is clearly a movie continuity.
Mm-hmm.
And until we see Batman versus Superman, it's unclear to me if the Batman trilogy is set in that universe or not. This is the same actor who's going to play Superman, so clearly that's the same character.
Mm-hmm.
But is Man of Steel the start of the DC Cinematic Universe that we're getting, or are some of the others going to be kind of grandfathered in?
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same blurry line that Marvel has with the Hulk films.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Ang Lee Hulk film, the one that had Ed Norton, those, it's not like they're sequels necessarily, but the other one takes place after other stuff that could have been the first one. Then you get the Avengers stuff.
Yeah.
This was one, though, that Man of Steel did all right, but not well enough to say, we've definitely got to have a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
But that's also part of what makes me wonder if the Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice, and bazillion movies after it game plan, if that's just wishful thinking or if they're actually going to be able to make that work. I hope they can.
Yeah.
Again, this was fun. This was good. There were some aspects of the tone, the style, that were a little darker than I would have picked myself for Superman, but they made it work well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you're going to put the character in the same universe and setting as Batman, which obviously they do in the comics all the time, but the Christopher Nolan Batman trilogy and the Brandon Routh Superman, oil and water almost.
Mm. But isn't Superman supposed to be the lighter side to Batman's darker side in terms of...
He is, but I think many of the Superman portrayals we've had before were a little too light, a little too Boy Scout, a little too golly gee whiz kind of, if you know what I mean, versus we've gotten very dark Batman characters.
Yes.
And having one that can be taken seriously, not just as an alien goofball or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to find appropriate takes on each character and have them be able to be in the same narrative universe. And I think it's harder on live action than on paper. But even in the comics, how do you have a story where a guy who can fly at super speed and juggle planets or whatever needs some guy who can just look around and deduce things? I mean, investigative reporter, Clark Kent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think, again, this Superman is one that you can put in the same film as the Batmans we've seen on film.
Mm-hmm.
And it would work. You know, if you took the Michael Keaton Batman and almost any previous Superman to this, it would just feel a little weird.
Yeah, I can see that.
But again, that's just part of the nature of the characters and stuff. I'm looking forward again to Batman versus Superman.
Agreed.
But this was a lot of fun. Good film, good cast, good writing. Again, I would have gone in a few different directions, but they stuck to their guns. They could have been a little clearer on the storytelling, but they gave us a good vantage point on Krypton, on Clark growing up, where Clark's at this point in time, mm-hmm. and really everything you need to get him at the Daily Planet, and you could pick up the next time with, okay, he's a reporter.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I liked the use of the Kryptonian dad, Jor-El.
Mm. Yeah. Again, much bigger role than I had expected.
Yeah, agreed. And I like them taking the time to kind of explain how Clark came to be in terms of the first natural birth and forever.
Yeah.
And that he contained not just his parents' hopes, but the hopes for a planet. And they're talking about how their society had evolved to a point where they
had a planned society.
Yes. And they had children with such strict expectations. And they wanted a child who could be more than simply what was expected of him.
A wild card.
Yeah. Someone who could dream and attain those dreams. Someone who could hope, fulfill hopes, and could lead people to a better life.
Well, one of the things that's a common aspect of the live-action Superman we've gotten is the role Jor-El plays. Because Marlon Brando in the first theatrical film, Terrence Stamp did the role in, I think it was Smallville, but it was more of a voiceover kind of. The whole concept of a simulated Jor-El to lecture Clark or whatever. This was, no, he's just a simulated dad.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was a good dynamic. It played well. It had a humanity to it that many of the past incarnations have lacked.
Well, I liked him, especially in the scene up on Zod's ship, where they only had the few seconds together after he'd helped Lois, and he says, you know, blow out the bulkhead next to you and they'll talk to you, basically. Mm-hmm. And he says, we wanted you to live among the humans, to be as human as possible before you found out your Kryptonian heritage and what we gave you from Krypton.
It's funny because I would argue this is one of the more well-adjusted in that respect, Superman, in terms of, is he human, is he Kryptonian or whatever. So there are times in the comics where he's totally human, forget the Kryptonian stuff. There's other times he's really embraced his Kryptonian heritage.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a little, maybe not so well adjusted in terms of trust and are the humans worth saving or not, but that's just because the way he's been treated.
Yes.
Not because of the is he human or not aspect.
Yeah. Well, I liked the attitude they gave Jor-El, though, of if you were told too much too soon, you might have been willing to commit genocide if you weren't so fully integrated and fully bonded and fully humanized.
If at the time you were getting bullied as a kid,
yeah,
you realized you were of another planet and could wipe this one out and replace it with people like you.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that was... Well, again, this one did a very interesting job of showing how Clark understands what bullying is.
Yes.
And standing up for doing the right thing. And even very subtly, how doing the right thing pays off.
Mm.
He saved Pete later on. Pete, actually, who'd been horrendous to him before, treats him as a friend.
Yeah.
Which obviously worked out very well for Pete, who became, I believe, a manager at the IHOP, or at least
yes, he did.
Working at the IHOP. I don't know that he was the manager.
That's true. That's true.
Probably wasn't, because I think he was the one taking people to their seats. And there's nothing wrong with that profession. My only gripe against IHOP is they put gluten in their eggs.
Yeah, I know. That...
But other than that, I've got nothing wrong.
As secret ingredients go in your omelets, I'm opposed to gluten. That's all we're saying.
Celiacs.
Yeah.
But I don't want to disparage people who do that kind of, you know, work at restaurants and stuff, because I love eating at restaurants.
Exactly.
And I think it's a very important job. Otherwise, I would starve to death.
I only want to disparage the gluten.
Well, and I want to disparage eating at that particular IHOP, because I think Kryptonians tend to crash into it a few times.
I know, right?
That was a pretty obvious product placement.
The Sears.
7-Eleven, the Sears. But it's better than making, you know, fake names or something like that.
True. True.
I did like how we got the LexCorp oil truck.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the satellite they smashed into might have had a Wayne logo on it, but it happened too fast. I couldn't tell.
Yeah. So I enjoyed the movie a lot. It's funny because the first time we watched it 3 years ago, I remember liking Jor-El more than I liked him this time. And I don't know why.
For me, what really stuck out in terms of what I had remembered about the film was the fight scene, particularly when Zod gets killed, but also kind of leading up to that when you've got kind of the crater part of the city and Zod's like, I've got no purpose left in life. I'm going to, you know, wreak havoc or something.
Yeah. I think last time, because I wasn't expecting so much of Jor-El, and I wasn't expecting him to actually have a paternal influence on Kal-El.
I'd forgotten how much time we'd spent on Krypton at the beginning.
Mm, yes.
I mean, that was a decent chunk.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there are aspects of the film that I think it's very good. It's a lot of fun. But having seen it 3 years ago, having watched it now, if you had quizzed me on what had happened in the film prior to me watching it tonight, I would have gotten certain parts of it, but would have totally bombed on others.
I would have bombed on most of it, but what I remembered so strikingly was A, that Jor-El was in it, but B, that Lois earned Clark's trust. and Superman's trust, and that that was really a pivotal part of the movie.
I like this Lois so much more than in previous ones where she's either a horrible mother endangering her child left, right, and center as in the previous Superman film, or just always kind of angling for something.
Mm.
This one was a reporter but didn't seem very opportunistic or callous.
Mm-hmm.
She actually seemed to care about the people she was reporting on.
Mm-hmm.
And while after the story, wasn't doing it at the expense of mm-hmm. the people involved.
Yeah.
It's a more respectable Lois.
Yeah, yeah. And a very respectable Perry White on all levels.
You know, it's funny because he didn't have that large of a role in this film compared to other incarnations. And most of it, really, we had two or three scenes with him in his office with Lois. Most of the rest of it was just trying to get out of Dodge or whatever in Metropolis and standing by his people and trying to make sure they were safe.
And that's
there's a leader aspect there that mm-hmm. I liked.
Yeah, see, a lot of times, though, when I think of Perry White from previous incarnations, I think of him as yelling at the reporters, yelling about deadlines, yelling about getting the story done. I don't think about him as being the leader in the trenches, making sure everybody evacuates the building and that kind of thing.
You know, it's funny you mention that because what I just remembered is somebody who I thought had just been announced as being in one of the DC films, it must be Batman versus Superman, playing Perry White is the guy who played J. Jonah Jameson. No, he's going to play Commissioner Gordon.
There you go.
That's who he's going to
play. J.K. Simmons J.K. is going to play right. Commissioner Gordon.
Because again, J.K. Simmons League. As, yeah, that, yeah, as J. Jonah Jameson, that's all he does is yell at people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an aspect of Perry that does some of that, but I liked this one, and I want to see this Perry in Batman versus Superman at an opportune time giving Clark essentially the advice Superman needs of these people need to work together.
Mm.
They need to,
mm-hmm.
you know, this is what the world needs at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to set an example, to do the right thing, be the best, you know, whatever you, phraseology.
Yeah.
And that there may be others out there, and if they can grow their circle, you know.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that film. I thought this was a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Good action. So I'm again curious if the Batman trilogy that we just completed with, you know, Dark Knight, Batman Begins, Dark Knight Rises, whichever order they were in, if that's part of this continuity or not.
Yeah, me too.
So we may go through those films anyways, just because we haven't done them. May do a trilogy on that. We've got a number of other films we may do with the Captain America Civil War coming up. We may go through the Iron Man films. We've mm-hmm. already done the Captain America ones.
Mm-hmm.
We've got one or two other trilogies we're thinking of and a number of other movies. Again, we've got stacks of DVDs and Blu-rays, so it's just a matter of finding the time to watch it and record.
Yep.
Anything else? Are we pretty much done?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.